This is Mame Warren. Today is the 16th of April, 1996. I'm in New Brunswick, New Jersey, with Eugene Perry. Now, do you like to be called Gene or Eugene?
Doesn't matter. All right. Whatever's most comfortable with you.
All right. Okay. So you grew up in Waynesboro?
Yes. My family has been there about three generations. And I grew up reading about Washington and Lee, as a matter of fact.
Reading what about Washington?
Reading about the basketball team.
Oh.
I had attended Coach Canfield's camp when he used to hold the basketball camp at Fairham Junior College.
Right, now I don't know anything about the basketball camp, so okay. Tell me about that.
Well, he used to run a summer basketball camp for kids ages, I think, about, say, 10 to 18, I think. And I read about his camp in the Roanoke Times. And asked my folks if I could go, and they said, if you save enough money, you can go. So my brother and I went. That's where I met Coach Canfield, and that was my introduction to Washington and Lee. And we had a great time at the camp. In fact, one year when we went, John Wooten, the legendary coach of UCLA, was the speaker for the week. But that was my introduction to Washington and Lee back then. And then being in at Waynesboro High School, Lexington was one of our big rivals.
Oh.
So I had been to Lexington many times.
Uh-huh.
The church there on Main Street, First Baptist, used to have programs which our church used to attend. So I was very familiar with Lexington. And after our band played there for halftime, my high school band played at football games at Washington Lee. So that was my, you know, I've been around quite a bit, but I followed the basketball team. And in those days, the basketball team was very good. And I just kept up with the school through the basketball team.
So were you recruited to come to Washington and Lee to play basketball? Or did you approach Washington Lee? How
no.
did you come there as a student?
I applied to Washington and Lee. It was one of the schools that I applied back in 71, spring of 71, when I graduated from high school. If you were a black male and had good grades and had done well on the SAT, you could go to any school you wanted. And I think my mother and I counted 83 schools that wrote me and said that I was accepted based on the fact they sent me this letter. It was 83 schools.
Good Lord.
And this was all based on academics. I played sports in high school, but none of the schools wrote me because of athletics. But Washington Lee was a school that I applied to because I had checked schools in Virginia that I wanted to attend, and that was one of them.
So were they interested in you like all these other schools were?
I don't think so, really. I don't think they had much respect for the public schools that were close to them. I didn't get that impression.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because I was recruited by Notre Dame, Stanford, Princeton, all these other schools. And I got a call on one Tuesday evening. Someone from Washington Lee called and spoke to my mother and said that they wanted me to come to scholarship weekend. That Friday. And I hadn't been making visits anyway. I was actually getting a little tired of them. And my mom said, well, this is a school that you applied to. They want you to come for scholarship weekend, and they're going to pay for everything. All we have to do is drive you up there. Well, I knew right then that I hadn't been on their A-list. I suspected, because it was too spur of the moment. But I said, fine, I'll go. You know, I want to go. And so my dad and I went there. And there were a number of young black men that were there that weekend. It must have been 20 of us, I guess. They were all invited there for that weekend.
Were there non-black men?
I really don't remember. I think it was scholarship weekend. I think there were white students there too. I think they were.
I mean, they didn't have a segregated
weekend.
No,
I don't think so. I think we all were there for scholarship weekend.
Okay. Yeah. Now, you're the first person who's talked about scholarship weekend. I don't know what that means. Tell me what that means.
I hope that's what they still call it. But that's when they bring in the students that they really want, I think. And you come there and, you know, they want to pitch the school to you, you know, and they're going to offer you scholarship monies, you know.
So what was their pitch?
You know, we're really going back to ancient history. I'll just tell you what happened.
Okay.
My dad and I drove up there, and the first person we met was Jim Farrah, senior. And
what's his name?
Hello.
He used to referee games in the Valley District where we played. That's what that was called. So he knew me, and I recognized him. And I was a little apprehensive about going there. Even though was the school I chose, I was still a little apprehensive about visiting the college. But he relaxed my dad and I immediately. I mean, he was so warm, and I really believed that he wanted me to come to that school. And so did my dad. And any apprehension I had, I lost right there. And had he not been the man he was, I don't think we would have gotten past that.
Okay. Past your apprehension?
Past my apprehension. Because he was very, he was what I think a Washington Lee man, a gentleman is.
I was hoping you'd use that expression.
Because that was what, so that was one of the reasons I wanted to see the school. I had read a lot about about Robert E. Lee.
Uh-huh.
I was a history buff, even in high school.
Uh-huh.
And I liked Robert E. Lee and I liked Stonewall Jackson, even though they were on the wrong side as far as I was concerned. And I thought that Dean Farrah was what Washington Lee was all about. He was a Washington Lee gentleman. And I didn't think it was fake. I thought he was genuine.
Did you have that concept of a Washington and Lee gentleman before you went there?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me what that concept was to you.
Well, this kind of comes out of sports. Everything I talk about is probably come out of sports. But in Stanton, you may be familiar with Robert E. Lee High School. We used to lose to them all the time. And I could not figure out who this Robert E. Lee was. Why, you know, what was this? And I started to read about him, and I found that he was more than a great general, that his men admired him, they loved him, they worshipped him because of the man he was. And even Stonewall Jackson was a good man. But there was something special about Robert E. Lee, and I always admired that. When I read the catalog, you know, he talked about the honor code. Then I talked to a man in my town, I think his name is Ross Hersey, who was a Washington Lee alumnus, actually there's several in town, he talked about the Washington Lee gentleman. So I had an idea of what that man was when I went there. It was based on Robert E. Lee, though. That was my idea of what a Washington Lee man was him and his integrity and all of that. And I bought into that, you know, because my dad was like that and my grandfather were like that and my uncles were like that. And so that was what a man was. And so that's what I was looking for when I went up there. And that's what I found in Jim Farrah.
And did you find it in other people?
Not that weekend, but as time went on, yeah, I found some there. Dean Farrah told me, you know, he set me up with a student host, Bob Ford. And Bob Ford was a wild man, you know, and he was one in that first group of blacks that had arrived there. He was a sophomore when I got there. He had just had an operation for appendicitis, like, I don't know, maybe the week before. I mean, it seemed like he had just gotten out of bed to be my host.
That was nice of him.
I thought he was crazy. And my dad didn't even really know if he wanted to leave me in his, with him. But I said, go back home. You know, I can call you if I need you. And they put us up in the Robert E. Lee Hotel, or Lee, whatever that little thing was on Main Street.
Uh-huh.
And Bob Ford was my host, and he started to tell me all these horror stories, some funny stories and some horror stories about what it was like the first year and what it was like then, that particular year. and we visited some classes. And I went to a history class because they had on my application that I wanted to be a history major. So I went to a history class. I don't know who the professor was, but he was very interesting. I think Ford was bored, but I was excited, you know, because he was teaching history. He wasn't teaching dates or whatever he was talking about. It was history, history that I liked. And so I was I was pleased with that. Then we went to another class, and I don't know what that was, and I was totally bored. We went to the gym, and I met Coach Canfield, I met Buck Leslie, some of those people. And then I started meeting some of the other guys on campus and seeing what the campus was like. I could feel the tension between the black students and the white students even then, that day. And but the guys that were there kept saying that they needed us. You know, the whole time now I'm surrounded by other kids who are high school seniors too. So we're comparing notes. When we would come out of class, we would always compare notes. If one guy saw something he thought was interesting, he would share it with the rest of us. So we were getting these reports. We were like scouts. And we had decided we would do it that way. You know, we wanted to know, because we all couldn't be everywhere. But we had kind of organized ourselves that we would share information as the day went on.
Where were all these other guys from?
Atlanta, Virginia. There were some guys from, I think, Connecticut. It seemed to be most of us were on the East Coast, as I recall.
So you bonded real quickly.
Oh, yeah. In those days, black people bonded very quickly. Uh-huh. You know, we all knew why we were there, you know. And so it didn't take long. I mean, we got in that hotel, we all looked around, and we found each other very quickly. And, we were having fun, too. You know, you're away from home, and you're in the hotel, and so we were having fun. You know, and all of us had been through the same thing. We all had were being recruited by all these other schools. Mm-hmm. We all had made visits. We were comparing notes. Have you been to this school? Have you been to that school? You know, what are your first choices? You know, and it was really a great opportunity to meet some other guys. You know, and I probably had an advantage because I was the one guy who had been there, had at least been on the campus, uh-huh. who knew what.
You were probably the tour guide around town.
Oh, no, I didn't want anybody to know that. But I knew what Lexington was all about. There was nothing mm-hmm. there, and I knew that, you know. So I kind of filled them in on what the town was like. You know, I couldn't tell them much about the school, but in terms of where they were, I was able to give them a good idea of where they were. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot. We had a lot of fun that weekend. We had some interesting experiences. One night, some of the locals saw us walking on the sidewalk to the cockpit and hurled some names at us. And so we went into the cockpit where the upperclassmen were. We were supposed to meet them there. So we get in there and we say, look, these people are calling us names. And, they seem like they don't want us here. So those guys, they said, where are they? And we said, they're outside. And when we went back outside, they were there. And so this argument ensued and name calling. And we kind of sat back and watched this. And I said, well, does this happen every weekend? What is this all about? And they told us that it had happened before and it would happen again. And it didn't really get physical. I think someone came and stopped it. But it was interesting to see that, you know, that weekend, because they couldn't. We got to see Lexington for what it was. We got to see what their experiences were like in the dorms, walking on campus, going in the dining hall. You know, you knew that you were in, that there was going to be some pressure that had nothing to do with academics. And that's why most of the guys didn't come back.
And that was my next question.
Only four of us came back.
There were four in your class?
Four blacks. And I know that actually there may have been a little scuffle that night. That incident, those guys said, I don't need this. I can go to Duke. I can go to Yale. I'm not coming here to deal with the academics and deal with this. And so I know most of them decided that night when we went back to the hotel, because some of the guys were shook up about it. He said, I'm not coming back here. And if I had any sense at all, I wouldn't come back either. But that's when I knew I probably didn't have any good sense. Because that kind of said, these guys need help. You know, and I can go to these other schools and probably have a good time, but this is the struggle, you know. And I had grown up in the 60s and, you know, Panthers and all that. And I was used to the struggle. You know, my dad was the first black police officer in Waynesboro, Virginia, and we had integrated some restaurants and some movie theaters. And so I'd gone to integrated high school and junior high school. So I was kind of used to that. So they kind of talked me into coming based on the fact they needed help. They knew that those guys, a lot of us weren't going to come back. And they were, the black guys that were there were very disturbed that we had seen that. And so I kind of decided the night that Washington would be in my first, I narrowed it down to five, so they went into the top five, that based on my weekend. And I thought I could probably play basketball. You know, I probably could make the team, even though I wanted to play football. But that came later. I actually made another visit up there. Now that I think about it, there was another visit after that.
Which way do you want to go?
It's up to you. But that was scholarship week, and I went there. I met the people. It didn't frighten me that they'd had the confrontation with the
rednecks. Well, it sounds like
it. Basically.
It sounds like it sort of inspired you.
I got a little psyched, you know, because I wanted some excitement. I went, you know, I grew up in a small town, and you know, I knew I didn't want to go to a really big school, you know. I knew that. My parents actually wanted me to go to the University of Virginia. But I thought they were going through the same things we were going. In fact, I think University of Virginia had just went co-ed in 70.
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
And, you know, I was born on that campus. So I started life there. And I didn't want to go there. A lot of kids from my high school were going there. That was the big thing, to go to UVA. And I didn't want to be around them.
Mm-hmm.
So that had more to do with it than anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they
mm-hmm.
offered me some good money, but I just didn't want to go with the people from Waynesboro. So no one was going to Washington or Lee. So that had something to do with my decision also. There was a lot of little things that drove me there.
So what were the tensions that as you came on as a student? What was it like day by day?
Mm.
And what were the good things too? I mean, mm-hmm. let's hear the whole story.
My first day there, my mother and my grandmother took me to school. My dad was in the hospital. He was very disappointed. He couldn't take me, but we went there. And so my mother and my grandmother were down in the quad. Trying to take I was on the fourth floor of the freshman dorm, that, you know, taking my stuff up with everybody else. And I saw all these other guys helping each other. Not one person helped my mother and my grandmother and I the whole time. It took us, you know, an hour or so to get the stuff up there. Not one person helped. But the other guys were helping each other. And this is two women and me. And not one person helped. I couldn't find the other three black guys. In fact, I didn't even know it was just, you know, three others beside me. I didn't even see them that first day. But that was interesting because where I grew up, you didn't let a woman do that, period. I would have never allowed you to do that. You see what I'm saying? No matter what color or anything, I was raised, that's not what a gentleman does, right? So I said, okay, fine. Here we are. This is it. And this is, you know, this is why they wanted me to come here, the other guys. And so this is the challenge. This is what it's going to be like. And my mother she didn't realize it was all male. I guess I never told her that until that day. It was so funny. And she was happy. She said, oh, this is great. Because my grandma said, where are the women? Where are the girls? I said, no girls here. My mother said, great, that's good. You know? But they were tired going down the steps.
I'll bet they were.
And, but they didn't say anything. I don't think they noticed. If they did, they didn't say anything. So that was the first day. And so I move in. my mother and grandmother leave, and I think one guy came down who happened to be Jewish. I had never had to know what, you know, I didn't know there was a difference between a Jewish person and a white person. So he comes in, and we get to talking. We both had this big thing about sports. He was from Detroit, and we started talking sports, and he was a Marvin Gaye fan. Mm-hmm. And I had Marvin Gaye playing. That's why he came in the room.
That's why he came
he
in.
Marvin Gaye. And so we started to talk. His name was Mark Sennel. And, you know, we sat there and talked just like normal people would talk. And
was he a freshman?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of bonded there. He was looking for a friend. I was looking for anything. I was just there, and I was going to kind of be by myself for a while, so I kind of soaked it all in.
Did you have a roommate?
No, I would not have had a roommate. If they had told me I had to have a roommate, I wouldn't have gone. You know, they said that you could have a single. And in those days, if a black student said he didn't want a roommate, he didn't have one. So I didn't want one. I didn't think that, I wasn't ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I never had a roommate my entire existence in Lexington. I never had a roommate until I went to the academy and the FBI. So that's where it started, and I, you know, we had a dorm meeting, and everybody came in. We had a good dorm counselor. I don't remember his name. He was a fair guy. And he made an effort to keep me involved and, you know, try to make me feel at home. And at the dorm meeting, we all were introduced, and we talked. And then we went our separate ways, you know, after that. And we spoke on the hall, but it wasn't like it should have been. You know, he went through the orientation, you hear all this about what is expected of you as a Washington-y gentleman. And I mean, most of the guys on my hall never went to school with a black. They didn't know what I was. You know, I've had the advantage because I had been to school with whites since eighth grade. And I had been in a situation where I was the only black in most of my classes, so I was used to that. They had no clue, you know. And as I got to know them individually somewhat, they just had no idea how to deal with me or any blacks. Certainly not as an equal. You know, they had black maids and, you know, and they had their ideas of what blacks were like. And I could tell. I mean, I could tell in the first week who I was going to get along with and who I wasn't. And but Mark was a friend. I met another guy. He must have been on the hall adjacent to mine, who was from Pennsylvania. He didn't know she should have been prejudiced. He didn't know that. He loved everybody. And he and I became friends. His name is John Clow. I actually was the best man at his wedding.
Who's this?
His name is John Clow. Yeah. He went to Washington Lee 2 years and then he transferred.
Uh-huh.
He and I were very close. He was accused of being a nigger lover and all kinds of things he went through because he and I were friends. The same with Mark. You know, they were accused, they were taunted. Little things were done to them because they were friends with me and another black student named Ernest Freeman, who we called Elf. And we all used to hang together, you know, we eat together. And they were not too popular with the majority of the people there because they hung with us. And the blacks used to eat at a table in Evans Dining Hall. You know, we'd go to class and we'd come at lunch. We'd always sit together. And people were annoyed that we did that. They didn't understand why we did that. Some of the students were intimidated, or they just didn't understand why we always cluttered together in Evans Dining Hall. But, you know, after you've been to class with people who don't speak to you all day, I mean, you want to eat with some, you know, you don't want to eat around people who don't want to be bothered with you. So you gravitate to people that you can laugh. We used to have a good time at the table. We used to get pretty loud there. Mr. Darrell, you know, a great man. He kept the peace. You know, he'd come by and tell us when we were a little loud, and you know, he would always come by and have something to say about what was going on around us. You know, if he found out something, he was a very he was a good man to have there at that particular time.
This is Jerry Darrell?
Yeah, Jerry Darrell. And he was, you know, he was trying to be a friend to us. He was a friend to us in those days. And but the dining hall, there was used to be tension in the dining hall. Because people were, you know, the white students would walk by and they'd see us over there. And, you know, I can't imagine what thoughts used to go through their mind.
So how many of you were sitting together?
No more.
There were four in your
four
class?
Four in my class and 15, I think, in the class ahead of me. We were never all there at any one time, never.
Oh, I'm sure it was real frightening to see all of you sitting at that table.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're standing, surrounded by
real,
400
other
people. Real
intimidating.
Yeah, isn't that something? So they were intimidated by us and didn't like the idea. They felt that we were prejudiced because we sat together. Mm. You know what I mean? I used to eat breakfast, and I'd get there early, you know, 7. Whenever it opened, I would get there early to eat breakfast. And I'd be sitting at the table by myself. Now, if John Clow or Mark didn't come by, or one of my friends, yeah. I was on the freshman basketball team. So if one of those guys didn't come by, no one sent me.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay.
But, you know, I never felt the school was prepared for the black males as they were for the females when they went co-ed. They did a lot of studying, and they were very prepared when they made that decision. Mm-hmm. And they did everything they could to prepare, to make the transition easy for the women.
Well, what's your sense? I mean, of course, you were just a freshman and you weren't there, but they didn't make a decision to allow blacks, did they? I mean, they had to allow blacks when it happened.
No, my understanding was they had, you know, the board got together and decided that we were going to integrate Washington and Lee. They didn't have to integrate. I mean, that was my take.
As a private school, I guess they didn't have to?
That was my understanding when I, freshman year, because I used to wonder why did they make the decision when they did?
Mm-hmm.
And just by talking to people around, they said, you know, the board made a decision. I guess they were getting some federal money.
Well, that's what I wondered. Were they probably getting
loans.
Were getting some federal money,
yeah.
So they probably had to.
But I don't think they were prepared for us at all, because when I got there, I realized that I said, these people, it's a very well-run school, I could tell immediately. But with all the intelligent people around there, they didn't have one black professor, no black assistant dean. Every white school in America in the 70s decided when they were going to have these blacks on campus, we got to get us some assistant deans, if for no other reason, just to have them there for show.
Mm-hmm.
Washington Lee didn't even have the sense to do that. So you have these 18 and 19 year old young men running around there with no role models, no man to talk to, except for the janitors, you know, the people who worked on campus, who were great, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But we had no one to talk to. And I don't know, like I said, it's a very well-run school, but they didn't think about that, you know. And they didn't think about, you know, we have these mixers, and they go to Hollins and bring all these girls to these mixers. They couldn't find black girls. And I know they didn't want us to talk to the white girls, right? So I thought that was stupid. I thought it was stupid that there were no adults around there, except for Mrs. Marjorie Poindexter, who was a secretary in the financial aid office, and the mother of to us all. Okay, she kept us in school, kept us from, you know, fighting, all of that. You know, when we got depressed and didn't want to call home because we didn't have enough money to call home, I mean, she had to be the mother to all of us.
Marjorie Poindexter.
Yeah.
Who is she? I've never heard that.
She's a secretary in the financial aid office for Dean Knoll. She died, and I always felt we should have started a scholarship for her in her name. If I hit the lottery tomorrow, I'm going to do that Thursday.
What a lovely idea.
I may do that anyway. They should have done it, really. The school, they knew that she was keeping us together. You know, they knew that. We always ran to her. But, you know, we had no one to talk to. And when the ladies got on that campus, they were ready for the girls. But they didn't do anything for us. They figured we were just boys and we could just mix in with the other boys. And that was stupid for them to think that, in my opinion. It was stupid because we didn't mix with them because nothing was done to make it easy for us. They just felt we could make it on our own. And we knew that. And we had a sense that if we did, you know, we had to make it so that the other kids could come along after us. You know, we were just guinea pigs, you know, pioneers is a better word than guinea pigs. We're pioneers. And there were days we'd sit around, we resented that, that they didn't think about what they were doing, you know, and we were just there. And then they would try to make up for the fact they hadn't thought this out, you know.
What did they do?
I don't know. You know, we would go to them and say, you know, there are no black girls at these things. So then one of them would say, well, take my car and go down the road. You know, we used this one, I can't think of his name. He's a young guy, he was a dean, he was assistant dean or something. He used to use his car, you know, to go down the road, as they called it in those days.
No, they still call it going down the road.
Good, I'm glad some things still exist. But, you know, they would do that. So we, you know, we sit around for a month or so, you know, they could see the tension is boiling. You got to get out and do something. You know, we had no place to have our own parties. You know, we used to party, we used to go into town, to the parties in town. And I think sometimes we'd party up at what was the Preston House, which is where some of the guys who were sophomores were staying, the Preston House, and they would have some parties up there.
I guess it goes without saying that no one was offered to pledge in a fraternity.
Not that I know of. You know, I mean, I wouldn't have done it anyway. I mean, why would I do that? I mean, I'm a member of a fraternity now. I did it after I got out of school, a black
mm-hmm.
fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't see, what was the point of that? I was going through enough, you know.
What happened during Rush Week?
I have no idea.
You weren't approached
at all? Oh, God, no.
None of you were approached?
No. I didn't know what Rush was. I just learned, you know, from the few, I don't want to get, there were guys in the dorm who were friendly. And, you know, and I knew what, I would ask them, what is this, what are you doing? And they would tell me what they were doing, you know. And I said, oh, that's cool. And a couple would ask me, well, you know, are you participating in Rush? And I think you had to pay money to be involved with Rush. I don't know. I didn't have the money if it cost any money, and no one asked me if I wanted to, you know, they didn't ask me a thing. And I wanted to play basketball. I wanted to be on the basketball team, so I was practicing when I had some free time, you know, for the tryouts for that. And
so how did that go?
It was very competitive. Very competitive. And it's very competitive. And so I don't, any...
Was it fairly competitive?
Yeah, I thought it was fair. I mean, they kept a lot of kids. They kept 15 guys. I don't think there was any reason to keep 15 guys. There's never a reason to keep 15 basketball players on a team. I mean, I coach little league and youth sports, and you don't keep 15 kids on a basketball team because there's not enough time. And especially you don't keep 15 players in college on the team because you're too competitive at that age. You know, so I thought that was a joke. It just showed that they didn't have the guts to make the cut. You know, I rather would, you know, if I had been cut, I would have just been cut. But they should have cut it down to 12, which is a normal number, 14, but they had 15. And, you know, there may have been some, we got along. I don't know that there were guys that were present. They may have been. There were some guys from Dallas. Bo Williams on the team. I don't think Bo ever knew, I may have been the first black he talked to, you know, but he was a nice guy. We got along fine. You know, he, there were times when we were talking, I don't think he knew exactly how to reach me, what we could talk about, you know. But I don't think he was a malicious guy or anything like that. I don't think he was used to that, you know. And I hurt my knee before the season started, and which was a very traumatic thing for me because the first game was going to be played in the new gym that year. We were going to play the University of Virginia to open up Doremus Gym. And I had circled that date on my calendar. I mean, that was a big day. I mean, whether I played or not in the game, it was a big day. Opening the gym, a historic occasion, and I would be there. Well, I wasn't there. I had my knee operated on. And that took a lot of out of me my freshman, that first semester. I mean,
freshman year, you had a knee operation?
Yeah.
What a drag.
That took, and you know, I know that, you know, Napoleon says in every battle there's a moment where either general can win or lose. And that was my first moment in terms of whether I was going to stay there. Because I put so much into being on the team. And at that age, you know, that was very important. You know, it's probably more important than going to class, but that was very important to me. And my knee, like, exploded. I'll never forget that. Mm-hmm. And I would have cried probably had not been all these white guys around me. Mm. And the pain, I really wanted to cry. But the guys really took care of me. I mean, they were very, the school in terms of, I got the best medical attention. You know, everything was done for me.
Was it operation at Stonewall Jackson?
No, I went to UVA. I would have never allowed that. My parents would never allow that. You know, I went to,
good move.
My parents, I went to Charlottesville. And, which worked out fine because I grew up, you know, 15 minutes, 20 minutes from Charlottesville. So I had the operation. My parents came, took me home, and I came back to school. And it was funny, when I was on the fourth floor, I had gotten used to the guys up there. Then I was moved down to the first floor. So I'm going to go up the steps. And I wasn't well received on the first floor. It was like going from the north to the south. Because I recall I had this red, black, and green flag, a flag of liberation. And it was on my door, just a little, a stick on. And I was in the room in my cast, and the guys on the hall knew I had to, they knew I was in there and I couldn't get to them. So they came by and banged on the door and ripped the flag off. Okay, and poured something under the door. You know, I don't know what it was, water or whatever, beer or something. They poured under there because there was nothing I could do. And they banged on the door, you know, just banged on the door. And I said, wow. I mean, you know, and I knew, you know, when I moved in that they didn't care for me. And then they made it obvious that they didn't care for me. And so I got word to the other upperclassmen that I was having a problem. So they came over to, you know, talk to the guys on the hall, make sure they understood that that was not to happen again. They didn't quite say it like I'm saying it to you, but they came over to make sure that everybody understood that that happened again, and that we'd have to deal with that, not as gentlemen, but we would deal with that, you know. And I think I told the dean of students that had happened. Of course, he didn't do anything because he said, well, who was it? And I'm saying, well, I didn't see who it was. If you want to ask, if you ask me, did I see them? No, I didn't see them. I can't see through the door, but I know who it was, you know. And you're not going to do anything about it because there's nothing in the manual that says you can kick a kid out of school for being an asshole, right? So, you know, nothing's going to be done. That's why I called my guys, so they would. And I don't know what they did, but you know, they took care of that. And so the rest of my time here, I didn't particularly care for it. I didn't like living down there with them. And I was really glad when that year was over.
So it was only freshman year you had to live in the dorm at that point,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So where'd you go?
Well, it was an upper class dorm across the street, Davis dorm.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved there.
So you continued to live in dorms?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All 4 years?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because I was lazy. I didn't want to, you know, I wanted to walk. I like the idea I could walk to my classes. You know, that's one of the reasons, you know, I applied to those type of schools. I didn't want to have to drive to a class. I liked the idea I could walk on the campus. I liked the campus, you know, and I liked walking the class. I liked walking on the quad, you know. I mean, I lost my wallet, and I found it on the quad. They returned it to the quad. So I knew that the honor code worked in spite of the racism, the honor code worked. And, you know, somebody borrowed my bike freshman year. I had a bike. Somebody borrowed my bike, you know, and they bought it back. You know, I use the term borrowed. But I didn't know if they borrowed it to use it or it would be in me, you know. Mm-hmm. And I tried to always look, give them the benefit of the doubt. Because if you're in a situation like that, you can't get caught up in everything being racist because you just, it eats at you, you know. You don't have enough tape for me to go on about that freshman year.
Did you ever think about leaving?
Well, I thought about leaving when I had my knee operation because I was just depressed about that. But, you know, I went back to school. And when I was on that bottom first floor, I thought about leaving. But I said, they weren't going to run me away. I mean, you know, they were just punks, and they weren't going to run me away from, you know, from the school. So I became more determined.
What did you think of it academically, and what were your experiences like in the classroom?
I had I was fortunate to have Charlie Turner for history. You know, I don't know if you've heard about Charlie Turner, but he was talk a mile a minute. He was famous when I got there for detail and, you know, trivia and all of that. And I had him 8 o'clock in the morning. And I enjoyed him. I mean, I enjoyed the history. You know, and he was demonstrative, and he was something else. But I enjoyed it 8 o'clock in the morning, going to his class. I had a calculus class with Felix Welch, and I thought he was a racist and a redneck, and I didn't enjoy that class at all. But I probably wasn't prepared for calculus, quite honestly. It was a big jump, and so I struggled there. And I gotta stop using these names. But my English professor.
Oh, no, please. Please, name names, because we're real interested in talking about the faculty in particular. Please.
Dr. Ray. Dr. Ray was my English professor. And we had to write a composition or something. And I wrote it. And I think he gave me a D or an F on this composition. And I was mad. I'd never seen a D or an F on a report card beside a grade, you know, beside a subject of mine. So, and it's also Parents' Weekend. So I got my midterm grades, and I think I had this, he may have given me an F on this thing. And my parents, it was bad timing. Of course, that's where they wanted, you know, of course. So my parents come there, and they definitely want to meet this man. And I want to talk to him. I mean, you know, when you write something, how can you tell me that what I wrote was a failure? How can you tell me that? You know, grammatically and anyway. I wasn't too pleased with that. So we go in, my father and I and my mother, we're sitting there. And Dr. Ray says, well, I figured Gene would have these problems, coming from a black high school. My dad said, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? He said, well, you know, sometimes they have difficulty. They have difficulties writing. My dad said, well, let me explain something to you. My son went to a white high school where the blacks made up about 15% of the student body, a high school that has a good reputation. So he was trained and taught by white people and did very well at that white high school, and that's why he's at this white university. So give me another reason why my son got an F on this test. Tell me that he can't write or he made some grammatical mistakes. Do not tell me that he got this F because he went to a black high school, which he did not. And looked him right in his eye and said those very words. And Dr. Ray had nothing to say. Then he went to, well, he made these mistakes, blah, 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 blah. You know, and so, I mean, a professor can give you an F for anything in English. I mean, I didn't realize I had to be perfect grammatically when I went to Washington Lee. That woke me up, okay? And because in high school, my high school, I mean, you were penalized for making grammatical errors, but no one would ever give you an F for your thoughts. I mean, these were my thoughts, and I didn't feel like I could get an F for my thoughts. But he gave me an F. I'm pretty sure it was an F now. You know, he bled all over. And I thought that was stupid. You know, but he said, that's the way he graded. I said, fine. Those are the rules. I can play by the rules. But I know that you're prejudiced. You've played your trump card when you said to my dad that I did that because I went to a black school. Now, I can no longer respect him. I could not respect him. And for me to say that was a big thing, because I grew up, you respect your elders. You know, my parents, I didn't know the difference between black and white. Even though I grew up in a segregated town, you know, I was taught to respect white people, adults, unless they said something or did something, you know, and then you didn't have to respect. So I didn't respect him anymore after that. You know, I didn't care. I just wanted to get out of his class. You know, I just wrote him up as one of the bad guys, you know. And I always resented that about professors who would do that to an 18-year-old. You know what I mean? If you don't want to teach black kids or Hispanic kids or Jewish kids, then you should say that and you shouldn't teach them. You know, whether it's high school or college, you know, that's my opinion. Don't teach them, you know. And over the years, Dr. Ray and I mean, we got along. And he probably never thought that I felt that way, you know.
Did you take other classes from him?
No. Hmm. No, I don't think so. I avoided him.
I would think so.
You know, I didn't even like the idea that he was chairman of the athletic department. He had something to do with athletics, and, you know. But I was never taught to hate. I was brought up in the church, so. But I avoided him, and I thought he was a bad person. He wasn't what Robert E. Lee wanted. You know, and my opinion is probably extreme because I think Dr. Ray is probably a good man. I mean, I never had a problem with him after that when he would see me on campus. We'd talk. He was concerned when I hurt my knee. But I never forgot that.
I bet you didn't.
I never forgot that.
You need to turn the tape on.